Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney. The problem that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We have a very special treat for you today. We're going to talk about a problem that we've visited about, well, with increasing frequency because of its increasing imminence. And that is the idea of having the United States willingly, voluntarily, if surreptitiously, surrender its sovereignty to an unaccountable, unelected, foreign bureaucrat plucked from obscurity in Ethiopia by the Chinese Communist Party to be the Director General of the World Health Organization. The issue is not simply what might he do if he is given essentially absolute authority to control public health as he defines it, which turns out to be in a very sweeping way, but also what we actually learned from what he did when he didn't have that power, but he was still able to be influential in an advisory role during the COVID-19 pandemic. A man who has been a witness to, and indeed a frontline combatant in, the fight for effective treatment of COVID-19 is our first guest. His name is Dr. James Thorpe. He is a renowned and highly acclaimed OBGYN by training with a subspecialty that's fairly unique in maternal fetal medicine. He's published widely in his areas of expertise. He's also been incredibly engaged and articulate and I think effective in raising warnings about what has been involved in, well, the China model, the Tedros Ghebreyesus, this bureaucrat I mentioned, did to us with his malfeasant advice about COVID, specifically that everybody should take the jab, should take these so-called vaccines that in fact were radical experimental gene therapies. Dr. Thorpe is someone who featured magnificently in a Zoom call that our Sovereignty Coalition sponsored on Monday night of this week. And I asked him to come on the show to share with you all some of his insights that featured prominently in that program. By the way, I hope that all of you will take a look at those programs. We do them each week, Monday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Zoom. We also do a corresponding program on Twitter Spaces or X Spaces at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesdays. We'll have one coming up shortly in that latter category. Dr. Thorpe, forgive the long introduction, but I'm so pleased to have you with us and appreciative of both the contributions you made to that earlier program and those you'll make to this one. Thank you, sir.
Frank, thank you so much for having me back. It's an honor, a privilege to be on Securing America on the Frank Gaffney platform, and I'm honored to be able to call you a friend. And those seem few and far between in these days. Listen, we're in a time of tribulation, horrible tribulation in the world. And if you don't know who your really only savior is, listen up. Find out and figure out. I surrendered my life, my sovereignty to my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And he's the only one that you should ever surrender your sovereignty to. And by the way, I've been a student of the Bible and really a student of eschatology most all of my life. Mm. And if you haven't figured out who your Savior is, you better figure it out soon because that window may be closing. But yeah, I became very aware in a very personal sense that I had my marching orders from my Lord and Savior in early 2020, made it very clear to me that what was coming off was not from good, and it was not from God, it was from Satan, and that it was planned. You know, my first clue was that I had been using the drug hydroxychloroquine for 40 years in the most vulnerable population, women and preborns and children. And that was endorsed, by the way, by the CDC. They advertise it. Listen, a derivative of chloroquine has been around since the mid-17th century and has been crucial in literally every war since then, including the Civil War and the first two World Wars. This was a drug that I was very familiar with, and that was the key to taking out the pandemic. President Trump, with the assistance of some experts, you know, for example, like Steve Hatfield, MD, they stockpiled 62 million doses in the White House. Had they allowed to release that out, the pandemic would have been over by August. But what I saw was a complete reversal, a fascist communist plot to really demonically impugn the safety and the efficacy of this literally miracle drug and many others too. And by the way, early treatment. So when I became under attack for using a drug that I've used for 40 years in pregnant women and preborns and newborns, I knew something was very bad. And I also knew that it was very effective in SARS-CoV-1 after the turn of the century. So this
is so important, because what you really are speaking to here, of course, was the safety that you knew this drug had. And that was being essentially, well, not just negated, but really powerfully lied about by medical authorities in this country. And you introduced a term here that I want to say, I was so impressed by when you talked about it on the show the other day, but the diabolical, the demonic, the satanic aspects of this and what flowed from it in terms of the loss of life, needless loss of life, and all of the other costs to our society, to our constitution, to our freedoms. It's just, it is staggering how demonic it really has been, is it not?
It absolutely is. You know, and when I was asked by the Bush administration now 21 years ago to present my specialty and expertise in treating the fetus as a patient, 2003, I was happy to do that to help take down the partial birth abortion bill. And that is, Satan is in action. Listen, Satan comes to kill, steal, and destroy, and he goes after the most vulnerable. And I said to the Senate, an individual, a nation, a country is defined in God's eyes by how they treat the most vulnerable. And the horrible partial birth abortion procedure was satanic. And then our country has continued now. We've killed 70 million babies. And now our legislators, our politicians are celebrating and lighting up bridges now that they can actually get this evil satanic smile and celebrate that now they can kill babies after birth in New York City and light up the bridge. This is the same in every single kingdom since the beginning of earth. It's called Moloch. It's a satanic spirit. Baal, it's child sacrifice. That's what we're doing. And that's exactly what COVID-19 vaccine went after. It went after my patients globally, the most vulnerable patients in the world, pregnant women, preborns, and newborns.
Dr. Thorpe, we have to take a short break. I want to have you drill down a bit on what you've learned about the impact on those most vulnerable among us on the other side of this this break. But I want to say again, thank you for introducing the spiritual warfare dimension of all of this. It's vital that we understand that as much as we understand everything else about this pandemic, the people who brought it to us. We'll be right back with more with Dr. James Thorpe. Stay tuned, please. We'll be right back. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Good news for a change, folks. The hand of God is on our troubled land. I consider it truly providential that Senator Ron Johnson has secured the support of every one of his Republican colleagues for a letter urging President Biden to defer approval of two World Health Organization treaties currently planned for later this month, even though they are still being negotiated. What is more, fully half the Senate is now co-sponsoring the senator's legislation that would ensure that chamber performs its constitutional duty to vote on such treaties. These initiatives put the Biden administration squarely on notice. Its stealthy attempt to surrender our national sovereignty, states' rights, and personal medical freedoms to the WHO's odious director general is, as the senators put it, quote, dead on arrival, unquote. Join us in supporting these legislators in their divinely appointed mission at sovereigntycoalition.org. This is Frank Affney.
We're back. Dr. James Thorpe, I'm very proud to say, is in the house virtually. We're talking with him about the lessons to be learned from the COVID-19 pandemic, how it was treated, and specifically, as he's just made clear, the fact that we were induced to abandon the protocol that had been established for pandemic responses. Dr. Stephen Hatfill, a partner of Dr. Thorpe at the Advanced Biological Research Group, really important operation that's now doing cutting edge research into the problems with the vaccine, the so-called vaccine. But Stephen Hatfill has been on the show a number of times talking about, that ivermectin that was ready to go. Peter Navarro had, wrangled just enormous quantities of it. How different history might have been had it been brought to bear as President Trump asked to do. But instead, he was induced to go along with the bad advice of Tedros Ghebreyesus. So give us a sense of, if you could quickly, sir, of the real impact on those most vulnerable among us of this this so-called vaccine.
Sure. First of all, COVID-19 really didn't cause any problems in my very, very busy clinical practice in 2020. The disasters didn't start until after the rollout of the vaccine, and then they were just horribly disastrous, starting with very, very abnormal menstrual periods, just shockingly. Very, very many young women of reproductive age, infertility, can't get pregnant. Of course, with those very abnormal menstrual periods. In pregnancy, Frank, it was just a horrible disaster. We're looking at, if given in the first trimester, we're looking at miscarriage rates up to 80%, which rival that of the abortion pill called RU-48486 or mifepristone, which, by the way, carries a black box warning. So that's just not my observation. But that's what was published by Pfizer's first 12-week rollout that they tried to hide for 75 years. And by the way, that's the exact same rate that the fraudulent New England Journal of Medicine article in June of 27th, 2021, lead author Shima Bakuro, all 21 authors, federal employees, they manipulated the data and shifted 700 patients from the third trimester, the latter part of pregnancy, to the early part of pregnancy, thus diluting a miscarriage rate from 82% to 12.6%, which is, by the way, still too high. So it wasn't just—
They literally cooked the books.
They cooked
in order to cover their tracks.
Wow. And I published this in a peer-reviewed publication. But it was only obvious to a very keen obstetrical experienced eye, because it was hidden, as they usually do. But we're talking about multiple other complications. We're talking about late miscarriages, a profound increase in fetal death or stillbirth after 20 weeks, numerous mutations, if you will, malformations of all organ systems of the babies, multiple increase in organ malformations, severe placental abnormalities causing abnormal growth, severe early onset preeclampsia, severe early preterm labor, premature rupture membranes, blood clot, arrhythmias in the mothers and babies, severe bleeding at the time of delivery, and then an increased risk of preterm birth and premature baby death with a massive influx of preterm babies going to the ICU.
How early on did pharma, Pfizer and Moderna and so on, and the federal government know of what you've just said?
They knew that immediately. They had that data February 28th, 2021, and a whistleblower let it out. I think that whistleblower was from the FDA, I think. Mm. And that came out in around March of 2021. And then, of course, Aaron Seary did the famous Freedom of Information Act request and made the judge made Pfizer release it. Yeah. And of all days, it was dropped on April Fool's Day, about 15 months later, April 1st. Right. And it showed exactly that.
And if I'm right, this was part of the larger data dump of their documents, Pfizer's documents that were supposed to be, they wanted withheld for 75 years, and that Naomi Wolf and her team and the War Room Posse have been actively examining, I think with your help, among others, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
You know, Naomi and I are very, very close in terms of professional, and we work together, but I was not part of her team.
Okay.
And she arrived at her data and her opinions totally independent of me. We have the same opinions, but we had never any collusion with her data or her with my data. These are completely separate.
Okay, so we've only got a couple of minutes left, Doctor, but what you've painted, I think, is a powerful, well, condemnation, really, of both the folks who brought us this COVID pandemic and the experience with this vaccine and the mandatory jabs and all the rest of it. And why I want so much to, you know, tie this into what's supposed to happen to us 26 days from now, as we speak, in terms of giving this same Tedros Ghebreyesus, you know, arguably the greatest power anyone in the world has ever exercised, and without any particular medical competency or even training for that matter, especially given the track record we just talked about. Talk a little bit about this, and you know, if you wish, again, give us your sense of the diabolical features of what's afoot in the WHO.
It's very clear from the Bible. Listen, the Bible is the only book in the entire world history that validates itself, okay, by thousands of prophecies that have already been fulfilled. So it's very clear that we're in the end time. And it's very clear that, by the way, Satan owns this world. God doesn't own this world. You know, remember what Jesus said, you know, he was coming off a 40-day fast and Satan took him up to the top of a mountain. Satan said, I own this world. What do you want? Jesus didn't argue with him. This is a satanic evil fight that we're in. If we give up our sovereignty to Tedros and the World Health Organization, it's game over. They will come down and they will continue more of what you've seen. And we're going to enter a period of time, a period of 7 years, in which this world has never, ever seen such devastation and destruction, illness, pestilence, and never will see again. This is what the globalists are trying to rein in. Yeah. So be prepared. Do not let Tedros and the World Health Organization gain the sovereignty over our individual medical freedoms. It would be just a bloody disaster.
Let me just say, I couldn't agree with you more, sir. And I so appreciate, again, the powerful way you've put this. We've encouraged people to join us at sovereigntycoalition.org, project of, in part, the Center for Security Policy.org. This is an opportunity with the Not Now declaration to both communicate to the president and others representing you in official Washington of your strong opposition to what Dr. Thorp has warned is coming our way imminently. We need your help
folks, we need you to step up in this moment to make known to those who represent you that you do not want our country to go there. And not least that in addition to deferring any immediate approval, which is the plan, the end of this month, to have not one but two treaties approved, rather postpone that. Give us time to understand exactly what is being proposed here and to alter it as we must. And also to make sure that the United States Senate, where two of your representatives serve, is given the opportunity to do its constitutional duty, which is to say, to advise and consent to any such treaties, especially ones that are so portentous. Dr. Thorpe, we have to leave it at that. I thank you for your time today. I hope you'll come back to us with more. You're a national treasure, and we look forward to our next visit. We look forward to talking to you next time. Until then, go forth and multiply.
Night after night in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back, and a very special welcome to our next guest. He is a friend as well as a very, very valued colleague in any number of enterprises I'm associated with, including he is a senior fellow of our Center for Security Policy. He is a key member of the Committee on the Present Danger China that it sponsors. He is a man who brings to bear in these capacities and myriad others the expertise of a retired Army colonel who had specialized in special operations and psychological warfare, among other things. As a civilian in the senior executive service in the Office of the Secretary of Defense, he was one of our leaders on cyber warfare matters, as well as international affairs policy more generally. He has been detailed to places like the National Security Council and to the Homeland Security Department during his career in government. And these days he is a driving force in the, well, I say public intellectual space on the national security side with a couple of books, The Nation Will Follow, and most recently, War on the Deep State, War Against the Deep State, I think it is. He is a man who you can find in any number of periodical journals, as well as television programs, podcasts, and the like. And we're always delighted to have him here with us. John, welcome back to Securing America, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Frank. Always an honor to be on the show.
Thank you. John, I'm anxious to get your thoughts on a topic that's been the subject of a report by the Congressional Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party, program of our Committee on the Present Danger China, the webinar we did last Friday, and most recently, a very important investigation by the Coalition for a Prosperous America, all of which came to the same conclusion that we are insanely investing money from mostly, I think it's fair to say, unwitting American family's pension, you know, pension plan participants and the like, into communist China. Not only that, but into the Chinese Communist Party, and not only that, but into its People's Liberation Army, including this most recent report from CPA, which talks about funding BlackRock and MSCI, an index provider, the Chinese nuclear weapons program, in part. What do you make of this, John, and what do we do about it?
Well, so BlackRock prescribes to be ESG friendly, yet they fund a number of companies that still imprison Uyghurs and others and do forced organ harvesting. But with the Chinese nuclear movement, although BlackRock denies it, there's two specific nuclear-oriented companies that the report is at least $46 million has been invested. And for the layperson, when there is an investment by like BlackRock, that is an infusion of liquidity, i.e. cash, that they otherwise would not have. So this is very important and not insignificant. So BlackRock doesn't even know who they're investing in, or they're lying. Probably both are true. But this is a problem. And there is, and I've had a longstanding concern that the American intelligence community still to this day does not take the Chinese nuclear threat seriously. It's always Russia, 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 no matter what the question is. And they'll say, oh, they might, China might surpass our 1,500 strategic warhead count by the year 2030. No, we don't know. Using an Intel community term, I have low confidence that the IC really knows what's going on. And they always say, oh, they only have 400 to 500 nuclear warheads. Well, that's a lot already. And I don't think we really have spent enough time so we really have a solid knowledge. I think their warhead count is far greater. So BlackRock's giving them liquidity, and our own IC doesn't even know what the real warhead count is on the Chinese side. Other than that, everything's going great.
Yeah, just swimmingly. John, you know, one of the things that's always made me think people simply are not paying attention to this is the fact that, indeed, it was brought to the attention of the IC, I think, by Phil Carber, one of our colleagues on the Committee on the Present Danger China, and a bunch of graduate and even undergraduate students of his at Georgetown University a number of years back. And that was that the Chinese had surreptitiously, I guess, built some 3,000 miles of hardened underground tunnels in which these folks assessed they probably had nuclear weapons and maybe other missile and even perhaps production capabilities secreted. And I just, it never squared with me that the lowball estimates of what the Chinese had were accurate. But John, worse even than that is in the recent years, they have increased massively the number of silos, and the size of the silos is such that we believe weapons, missiles that could carry as many as 10 warheads are on them. I mean, this is an incredible public breakout, really, from those low estimates of the past. And the idea that we're helping to underwrite it in any way, liquidity or otherwise, is, it's treason, it seems to me. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's gross, willful negligence that borders on willful treason. It is just, any public accounting shows right off the bat, the Russians essentially match our warhead count. So anything over and above that is pure gravy to the alliance to destroy America, which the No Limits Agreement is an agreement to destroy America.
That's so between China and Russia, of course.
China and Russia. So right off the bat, from a starting point, Russia already has a nuclear match. So the Chinese have at least 7 ballistic missile submarines. We have 14. And they probably at this point in time probably have 9 or 10 in service. And each one of those has MIRVed missiles, multiple warheads on those missiles. We're the Strategic Command commander is asking permission to go back to re-MIRV our Minuteman ground component and our Trident submarine. So we're still essentially going out to sea, and our missiles on alert are single warheaded when they can carry three on the Minuteman side, up to 14 on the Trident side. This is utterly ridiculous. And the Chinese are not constrained.
The submarine missiles are not down to one warhead, are they?
Well, that the exact count is classified, but if you're reading a number of public sources to show this is nuclear virtue signaling, which means capitulating, I think it's pretty clear that we're only carrying one warhead on each of those Tridents. When again, it depends on the arrangements. You can carry up to 14.
I have no idea.
So this is just
John. I, as you know, I used to be in the Pentagon, responsible for nuclear forces policy, and that's the ultimate deterrent, we believe. I'm not sure that the submarines are completely invulnerable, as we've been led to believe, but that's certainly where we've historically put more eggs in our basket, if you will. But the idea that we've demerved the Trident submarines with missiles as well is just unbelievable to me. Anyway, John, let me pivot to the larger question of what we've been doing to our armed forces. You have been raising an alarm about the extent to which our 2025, fiscal year 2025 defense budget is seriously inadequate in a number of areas. I know specifically you've been very concerned, especially for an Army guy, about the strength of our Navy. Talk a little bit about what the Biden administration has been doing in terms of funding a military that we once used to characterize by peace through strength.
Yeah, the Biden team, after multiple years of growth in the DoD budget, the Biden team ensured that we lost more aircraft and ships in the 2025 budget submission than we lost at Pearl Harbor in 1941. It was a bloodbath of going in the wrong direction. So it made absolutely no sense. Now, their theoretical argument is, well, to recapitalize, we have to retire a bunch of old systems, which has traditionally been a debate in defense budget appropriations. Got it. I don't buy it. And whacking your forces because at some point in the future we're going to rebuild them is not a good sign. It's not a good optic, and I don't think it's going to work. So we need to. They're taking out like 45 F-22s, which are very expensive to operate, but they're also very capable, and the Chinese fear them. So we're going to wipe out 40 of the F-22s. Just to save on operations and maintenance budget, and they do chew it up. No debate there. But ladies and gentlemen, we have to maintain and recapitalize simultaneously. And so this was a victory of the comptrollers whacking our military and going south in every possible metric.
So John, putting these two pieces of this puzzle together, we have on the one hand the Chinese Communist Party massively building up its military in every respect, conventional, unconventional, as well as nuclear and other weapons of mass destruction for that matter. And we're helping finance it through companies like BlackRock and, as I say, unwitting American investors. That's point one. Point two, at the same time, we're dismantling the only military we have. Bottom line, in 15 seconds, what does that mean for deterrence and the security of our nation?
It's horrible, Frank. It sends the wrong message, the wrong optic, and virtue signaling just invites conflict.
Well, it could get us killed, potentially in very large numbers. Colonel John Mill, the author of The War Against the Deep State,
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Good news for a change, folks. The hand of God is on our troubled land. I consider it truly providential that Senator Ron Johnson has secured the support of every one of his Republican colleagues for a letter urging President Biden to defer approval of two World Health Organization treaties currently planned for later this month, even though they are still being negotiated. What is more, fully half the Senate is now co-sponsoring the senator's legislation that would ensure that chamber performs its constitutional duty to vote on such treaties. These initiatives put the Biden administration squarely on notice. Its stealthy attempt to surrender our national sovereignty, states' rights, and personal medical freedoms to the WHO's odious director general is, as the senators put it, quote, dead on arrival, unquote. Join us in supporting these legislators in their divinely appointed mission at sovereigntycoalition.org. This is Frank Affney.
Welcome back. Another of my favorite guests is in the house virtually. That would be Kevin Freeman. He has his own television program, which I highly commend to you. That would be Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman. You can find it at Blaze TV and a host of other platforms. Kevin is a tremendously impressive contributor to what we call the public policy debate in America, particularly about economic warfare. He's really one of our country's duty experts on it. The author of numerous books, including Secret Weapon, Game Plan, According to Plan, and most recently, Pirate Money. We'll be talking about the last of those momentarily. Kevin is also a member, I'm proud to say, of our Committee on the Present Danger China, and one of our leading lights on our sovereignty coalition, trying to raise the alarm about and hopefully derail the surrender of our sovereignty to Tedros Ghebreyesus of the World Health Organization. All of these are very important projects of the Center for Security Policy. I'm always anxious to encourage you to take a look at its content. Fair amount of it being from Kevin Freeman. He is one of our senior fellows, as a matter of fact. And while you're there, if you do appreciate the quality of the work that's going on there, including the support that the center provides to this program, I hope you'll consider donating to the Center for Security Policy. There's a button right there on the homepage. Kevin Freeman, it's great to have you with us, my friend. Thank you for taking the time to catch up a bit.
Hey, Frank, it's great to see you. And thanks for being a part of the current episode of Economic War Room.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about that important program. Thank you. It was an honor to be on, as always, Kevin, and to have a chance to talk with you and your audience about this World Health Organization madness. Give us a quick rundown of it from your perspective.
Well, Frank, the wonderful thing was you came to Dallas, and it was an honor to get to meet with you on a Sunday morning, and we went and talked to some of the leading experts. That's where I met Dr. Peter McCullough and John Leake, and we had an incredible, depthy conversation of the means of giving out our sovereignty without us even knowing it. So I asked you to come into the Economic War Room and explain it. You've been there before. You've talked about it before. Reggie Littlejohn from our coalition has been there. But we're now at crunch time, right? And so we invited you to explain. How many days out are we from someone in the administration just assenting or signing off or whatever, giving away the authority over our health, which is the authority over, well, as you explained, almost everything about our life?
Well, that's especially true, Kevin, as we discussed, because the guy to whom we would be surrendering that decision-making is a fellow by the name of Tedros Ghebreyesus, a Marxist from Ethiopia, picked for this job by the Chinese Communist Party, those are clues that maybe there's a problem here. But this guy has already made it absolutely clear. He sees just about everything, from climate change to poverty to instability to reproductive rights to gun violence, even to Gaza, as a public health emergency of international concern. And he will be empowered as a result of all this to tell us not only that we have such an emergency, but what we must do about it. You mentioned Dr. Peter McCullough. One of the things that I found fascinating about our conversation with him, and I wanted to get your reaction to it, was we talked a bit about Tedros's performance prior to getting this new sweeping, I think really in a way, unprecedented power over the whole world. And specifically the question was, did his bad prescriptions result in the needless deaths of Americans? You know, we lost about 1.2 million, I think, at this point to COVID. And I was stunned, Kevin, but I'd be interested in your reaction. He opined that maybe 80% of that number, over 1 million, died needlessly because they were following Tedros's bad advice. What did you think?
Well, the problem is that there was no health advice, and that's what he said. That apparently, you know, we all lived through it, but apparently the medical community at the highest levels, and Dr. McCullough was at the highest levels, was told stand down till you get to the hospital, and then when you get to the hospital, go on a ventilator, and the hospital's made a fortune from doing this. And all of this emanated from either Anthony Fauci or the World Health Organization. They weren't doing anything for early treatment. And Dr. McCullough has documented over and over and over that this was a disease that you could catch early. You didn't need to worry about young people. It was mostly people that were older or had other health issues. But if you treated it early, catch it in the nose, catch it in the throat, even simple things that we could have been told to do at home that would have stopped the virus in its track. And then he said, you know, natural immunity works extremely well, but instead the World Health Organization rushed us into a vaccine program that has caused, unfortunately, severe implications. So it's not just the 1.2 million that died or the 80% of those, but now all of these people that are suffering health complications when we could have done something, you know, like cleared our nasal passages or taken ivermectin or taken, you know, hydroxychloroquine. And the medical journals are very firm on that. And yet the World Health Organization dissuaded us from doing those things.
Yeah. And that was, again, just when Tedros had advisory power. Now we're talking about giving him, rewarding him, in effect, for that malfeasance and death and destruction. I mean, he seems to me to be a guy who should be indicted for it, not empowered to become the new global health emperor. But that's what's in prospect. You asked how many days? 26 days as we speak. Till this is a done deal. We need, in addition to God's help, your help, folks, to turn this off. One of the things that we're strongly commending to you, a project of our Center for Security Policy in collaboration with many others, is our Sovereignty Coalition. You can find out more about it at centerforsecuritypolicy.org. But check out the Not Now campaign that we're encouraging people to register and communicate to their elected officials. It's all very easily done there at the center site and or sovereigntycoalition.org. Kevin, we have to take a short break. I want to get your reaction to some breaking news. May not be accurate, but nonetheless, it's important, especially from your perspective in the economic warfare battle space and also your expertise on elections and their integrity and when they're being manipulated. We're going to come right back with the great Kevin Freeman. Please join us on the other side of this break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Kevin Freeman, one of my dearest friends and most valued colleagues, is with us. It makes this a red letter day. We used to have him on quite regularly, but he's gotten so busy that it's harder to get a piece of his time. But we're going to redouble our efforts because it's always fun to catch up with Kevin, especially about breaking news, Kevin. And you've got some that you wanted to share with us about allegations that Donald Trump, were he to become president again, might have some very problematic policy changes in mind. Tell us where you think the truth lies.
Well, the reason that this has come out is because President Biden is very clear that he's going to have to raise taxes, and he's going to raise taxes on the middle class and the wealthy. So how do you hide that? You spread a rumor about your opponent, President Trump, and you say, oh, he's a crazy man, and he's going to do a couple of crazy things. One of them is he's going to end the independence of the Fed and put completely under his own control of our monetary system and our money policy. And the second rumor that they've released is that President Trump intends to devalue the dollar. Now, this comes in the context of the Chinese nuclear option. And it's out there floating around, the Chinese nuclear option. And, you know, in national security terms, you think they're going to blow something up. But the nuclear option that we're talking about here is that they would massively devalue the yuan to capture global trade. And Trump is very against that and has been. So the insiders of the Biden team have been floating rumors that Trump intends to not only remove the independence of the Fed, but devalue the dollar dramatically. And the net result is that makes every investor concerned. That makes every economist concerned. We can't put that crazy man in the White House. Better stick with the tried and true, where he's going to raise taxes, and we don't like that, but at least he's not going to destroy our money. And so that's the rumor that's going around.
Destroying our money seems to have been pretty much a high priority, in fact, for the Biden administration. And Kevin, you've been warning about this as long as I've known you, that we're going to find ourselves so debasing the value of our currency that it will no longer have the reserve currency status that it has long enjoyed. And I remember vividly, I think it may have been our very, very, very first show. We were calling it Secure Freedom Radio at that point. You were sitting with me in a studio, and I remember we were talking about what happens if we lose that reserve currency status, and you made the point that this would be absolutely catastrophic. Remind us why, and then set the record as straight as you can about what you think Donald Trump's policies are actually going to be.
Well, I think this has been a normal condition of business for the Biden administration. Anything they're about to do, they blame and charge their opponent with actually doing. They're the ones doing it, but they're going to all of a sudden say, no, no, Trump would do this. Well, they're absolutely destroying the value of the dollar. The fact that the debt in the United States, since I wrote the book Pirate Money, which was 10 months ago, the debt's gone up $2.5 trillion as reported. And our debt is on an unsustainable fiscal path, which will ruin the currency. What happens if we lose the reserve status of the dollar is that we go to where Venezuela or Zimbabwe or Weimar Germany or Argentina have been with massive inflation. We got a taste of that inflation a couple of years ago, and we're still suffering the effects of it. So it's really bad economic policy. So blame your opponent, say he's going to crash the dollar, he's going to print too much money, he's going to fire Jerome Powell and take over the Federal Reserve, you know, scaremonger tactics. The truth is that none of those are Trump initiatives. Trump's primary economic advisors are people like Larry Kudlow and Kevin Hassett and Stephen Moore. And Stephen Moore is out there saying, no, 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 we've never discussed removing the independence of the Fed and printing too much money. We've never discussed devaluing the dollar. I mean, Larry Kudlow built his career as the guy who coined the phrase king dollar. We want a strong dollar. We don't want to see the world collapse. But that does lead into the answer that we've come up with. If we lose the dollar's reserve currency status, where do people turn? We're suggesting they turn to the states and let the states offer a gold and silver-based monetary policy instead.
Okay, you've called this pirate money, and it has been taking the country by storm, I think it's fair to say. I get weekly reports on your progress in enlisting state legislatures and governors in your effort to make this alternative. By the way, folks, an alternative as well to the central bank digital currency, which is a whole nother gambit that the Fed and the government of the United States seems to be set on, which would have some very untoward effects as well for you and your money. Kevin, give us a quick update on how it's going with pirate money and making available this transactional gold and silver.
Yeah, we call it pirate money because the founders said the only real money were gold doubloons and Spanish silver pieces of eight, also known as Spanish mil dollars. And I wrote the book in June of last year. It was out on shelves on August 1st. And it literally has, as you said, taken the country by storm. People are contact me from state after state after state. I just got a call from Idaho today and saying, how do we get this enacted in Idaho? We have 25 states who have signed on and said, we want to follow the Constitution and offer at the state level gold and silver coin as currency using electronic means to transfer, just like we do with our U.S. dollar, and we'd have an alternative optional monetary system. I had a candidate for governor in West Virginia came by and said, teach me all about this. We had people from Florida at Liberty Hawk Ranch, where we film this show. We had them coming in and saying, how do we win Florida? And the Speaker of the House called in from Florida, and we had great conversations. We're going to be at the Texas State Republican Convention this month promoting this with a booth on pirate money. So it is taking this the country by storm. If you want to understand it, the easiest way is to ask you to read the book Pirate Money. You can get it at piratemoneybook.com.
The only objection that I can see to doing this is that it may jeopardize some of the existing rice bowls of the Fed or the banks, for that matter. But it seems in every other respect, Kevin, to be a godsend, especially at a time like this when gold is certainly being widely viewed, including by central banks all over the world, as a store of money, of real value, I should say. And thank you for your leadership on this as well as so many other things. Please visit Kevin Freeman, get his battle plans and videos at economicwarroom.org. Godspeed, my friend. Come back to us soon. I hope the rest of you will do the same next time. Until then, go forth and multiply.